Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Talking in Circles. I am Clayton Caldwell with Philip Matthew and Spencer Cowan tonight as we're discussing the weekend that was from Kansas Speedway. The Busch McBush Race 400 from Kansas Speedway won by the one and only Kyle Busch. He pulled it off. And late race drama, a race that was pretty much dominated by Kyle Larson. He led 132 laps, but a late race restart got Larson a little bit off of strategy, got him a little bit deeper in the pack than what he was used to, some contact, and Larson ended up finishing in the 19th position. But Kyle Busch was your winner. Kevin Harvick finished second. Third was Brad Keselowski. Matt DiBenedetto fourth, and then Chase Elliott rounded out the top five. Some good names, some interesting names in there, but Philip, let's start with what you thought of the Bushy McBush race 400. Kyle Busch going to victory lane, 58th career win. What were your thoughts when you saw Kyle stand in the victory lane on Sunday?
The wrong Kyle was in victory lane. The fact of the matter is Larson dominated that deal. Spencer's boy has been the best guy on the one-and-a-half milers, honestly, other than, like, that Truex kid from Mayetta, New Jersey. I mean, the fact is that five car was so fast, it was in a different zip code, and the fact that Daniels took it out of his hands, it kind of explains how Jimmy Johnson didn't win for the last couple of years of his career. That's something that has to be cleaned up by September when it counts. Especially when they have to go back to Kansas later in the year. The fact that Kyle Busch won, I mean, it's Kyle Busch. What he's going through, him and Samantha, you know, after what happened with them last week. It was his birthday, too, so there's a whole bunch of stuff going on there for Kyle Busch. But, you know, he hasn't run all that great the last couple of years coming off that second championship, which in its own right was a gift, but he got gifted this one. There's a whole lot of stuff that worked out in his favor to go and get that win. But, hey, he's got a win. Him and Ben Bayshore have their first win together as a crew chief driver combination, and now they can start doing some R&D work. There's a couple of races here coming up after this week and next week where they're going to get practice. So it's entirely possible that Kyle Busch could get on a little run here and give himself a little momentum, have momentum for the first time than he's had in more than a couple of years. So got to give credit to the 18, pulled it through. There's a reason why he's one of the best. But honestly, Kyle Larson had the best car and probably should have won that deal. Kevin Harvick pulling out a second when you consider that the rest of Stewart Haas Racing was in another country. Is I guess typical. That's my take. I mean, Brad threw a bad block there late in the race that basically ended up giving us the finish that we had, trying to get two in a row. But is what it is. You know, Kyle Busch eventually is going to win a race at some point during the year, so. He got it out of the way early, and he's going to get to do some R&D work the rest of the regular season.
For sure. That's the benefit of that. You can make some aggressive calls at the end of these races if you have to try and get some playoff points. You can do a lot of different things. Kyle had a pretty good car. I mean, to give him credit, he won stage one, finished second in stage two, so he got a lot of points on there as well. But he wasn't the dominant car of the day. Spencer, that one had to hurt. I always say when, you know, as a Bill Elliott fan growing up, you know, I remember his wins in the 9 car when he drove in 2001, 2002, and 2003. I remember those wins. But there are some heartbreakers. The 1997 Daytona 500, it stands out. The 2003 Homestead finale that just linger and still hurt to this day. And they always said, you know, Richard Petty will say, I can remember some of the losses over some of the wins. How this one feel for a Larson fan, and what do you think of his performance and the team's performance in general there on Sunday?
I mean, yeah, it sucks. I mean, this one stinks more than Atlanta. You know, even though I feel like he had a better car at Atlanta than this, and like Philip said, the five car is just, it's on a whole other zip code right now. If you ask me, put aside if I'm a fan, if I didn't have a favorite race car driver, and I was watching races week in and week out, the five car has been the best car on track all year. No matter where they go, there's been a few races where he hasn't led a lot of laps, but as far as a few races, I mean, the car has just been unbelievably fast. It's fast. It's faster than all the other three cars at Hendrick, I feel like. Yes, Byron's been pretty solid. The nine is just nowhere near the five is. But back to the point that you asked me, this stings way more than Atlanta. Just because Atlanta, he used up his stuff and he straight up got passed. I feel like the cautions that when they fell came out at the wrong time, the tire caution, I'm sure we'll talk about that. And then when the last caution that wasn't with the tire when Stenhouse spun, because Larson was able to regain the lead, started first, got the lead, and was driving away with a hint with a few laps to go, and Stenhouse spun. So the cautions just didn't fall right, and Greg Ives is doing a hell of a job over there. I really like Greg Ives. Greg Ives reminds me, I said this on the show before, of a Cole Pern. He's laid back, he's quiet, he's chill, and he's extremely smart and knows how to set up a race car and get the stuff done. So the other teams, when everything goes the five's team way, the competition better look out, because he's in a whole nother zip code, and the car is really flying right now. And he's dropped a few spots in the points for late race incidents and whatnot. Talladega really hurt them; that dropped them back. So he has a damn good shot this weekend at Darlington. So see what he can do.
He really does. There's no doubt. Larson's been good everywhere we've gone, and Cliff Daniels and those guys over there at that five car have really done a good job. And they've really, listen, all Hendrick Motorsports has really figured it out this year, especially in the mile and a half tracks. They are the team to beat right now in the mile and a half tracks. Toyota is close, and Penske's pretty close. But, the Chevrolet's, I think, are the best team. And there's a few guys who ran pretty good. Philip mentioned Kevin Harvick. Now, he wasn't great 7th in Stage 1, 10th in Stage 2, but he was the best of his teammates, and he was able to pull off a second-place run, obviously, with the situations that went on toward the end of that race. He was able to gain a couple of spots just due to what happened at the end, but he's still a second-place run. He did a very good job there. Kozlowski, 3rd, Philip mentioned his block. DiBenedetto, who needed a good run, a solid run in 4th, and then it was Chase Elliott, 5th. Martin Truex Jr., 6th. Thought I'd see a little bit more out of the 19 this weekend. They've been pretty good on these mile and a half tracks the last few weeks, and really the last couple of years they've been real strong. But it just seemed like they were okay. You know, they didn't have the raw speed that we normally see from that 19 car, so that was a little surprising for me. A hell of a run for Tyler Reddick. He deserves a lot of praise. He just did a great job. Chris Buescher, who was in a prime opportunity, we'll get to that in a little bit. He finished 8th, and it was William Byron and Austin Dillon rounding out the top 10. Philip, who really stands out to you in the top 10? I mentioned Truex, a guy who I thought just would have a little bit more speed. DiBenedetto, who needed to have a good run. It seems like they're really rattling off some decent finishes here lately. What about the rest of the top 10 there, and who do you have that ran pretty good?
Yeah, you mentioned Tyler Reddick there, Clayton. I mean, he needed a good run. When he puts together a run, he's able to really run up in the top 10 all day. I mean, his teammate also finished in the top 10, so great day in general for RCR. Reddick definitely needs the points, but these 1.5 mile racetracks where they're worn out, you can run the wall, those are tracks where he can make an opportunity. Unfortunately, that's not every track, that dump in Texas is one of them that isn't like that, but they only get to run there once. But at Kansas, being able to run the wall and being able to use that is able to give him a little bit of an advantage compared to other drivers. I think Larson was basically driving about a half a lane to a lane off of it, and he was able to make things work the whole day. But Reddick was running the fence, and to me, that's the run, you know, when you consider where he's at and what his struggles have been so far in his Cup career relative to what he has shown in Xfinity and in trucks even. I think that's a good momentum run going to Darlington, which is a track that I think suits him well. Going to Charlotte later on in the month, that will probably, with the 600, will probably suit him well, given if they bring the right tire. It's a good momentum builder for him in regards to trying to make this playoff, because there's so many winners right now. There are some other guys in there. I mean, Buescher got screwed because of the stupidity of NASCAR. You know, that was a call. Lambert's not known for making good calls, and that was a good call. And if it was Chase Elliott or if it was somebody else, they'd have thrown that yellow. But because it was Chris Buescher, they literally let that thing cycle after 20 laps. And, I mean, that, you know, ridiculous. It affected the race in the same, like, it affects the race, it affected the race, and it's like it affected the race 20 laps before, and so I feel bad in that sense, because he probably had a chance at a top five finish, you know, he could have, getting an eighth place finish, considering what Roush Fenway's putting out there on a weekly basis, is not horrible, but, yeah, I think those are the two people that stand out to me in regards to the top 10, and both of them are kind of on the edge or on that playoff bubble discussion. So those are the two guys that stood out to me.
Yeah, for sure. And how about you, Spencer? There was a few guys, even when you go deeper in the field, who had some decent runs. You had Suarez in 11th, Michael McDowell in 13th had a solid day, or solid finish, I should say. Ryan Newman had an interesting day. He had to come all the way back from two laps down after NASCAR determined that they maneuvered the car. They pulled out the side skirt of the car during a pit stop, and they had to bring him down on the pit road and perform a penalty underneath the green flag condition. So Newman lost a couple of laps through that. So a solid day, a solid rebound for him to come home 16th. That's yeoman's work there. But who really stood out to you, a couple of guys, Spencer, that really stood out to you on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, as far as, you know, obviously you're going to see the same guys that run up front, but there were a few guys that some good runs and needed a good run, whether it's for a big team or a small team. You guys pretty much mentioned Harvick. He really needed that. Matty D, he really needed a good run. Reddick, he had a good run and needed that. As far as somebody that had, I would say, that had an okay run and who has had an awful year, would probably be Briscoe. He came home 20th, and you look at that as the Stuart Haas race car. But, I mean, he's really – that team is stunk, like bad. And, yeah, he wasn't up front. He wasn't leading laps. He wasn't doing this. But to come home 20th can somewhat give them a little bit momentum moving forward. But, I mean, as far as, you know, where guys have finished, and then McDowell with 13th, that's really huge for that team to come into a mile-and-a-half racetrack. He's locked into the playoffs. He's pretty well off in the playoff standings. He's 9th in the playoff standings and 13th in the regular standings. And he came home with a top 15 finish, which is huge. That keeps the points up there. And that's another track that they can check off if they had a good finish and move on to the next one. And that team has really, really, really impressed me this year. They've done a hell of a job front, leading laps, won the Daytona 500, and realistically, they're going to get eliminated in the first round of the playoffs. But the fact of the matter is they made the playoffs, they won the Daytona 500, and they're having one hell of a year.
Yeah, they are. There's no doubt. And 13th in points, and he's doing that, you know, obviously to the rest of the season. It's not just Daytona now. Daytona helped them extremely, and so did Talladega. But still, 13th in points is something to hang their hat on for that 34th team, no doubt about it. Okay, I'm going to start with Spencer, and then I'm going to go to Philip, get his take on it. Spencer, again, I mentioned this a lot on the show. I kind of want to get the new fan perspective before we get the old school perspective, because I have a feeling I know which way Philip's going to lean
I'm curious your take on the situation. Let me paint the picture here for everybody who might have been buried under a rock here the last couple of days. Lap 231, well, really during a round of green flag pit stops, a tire got loose and was sitting on the front straightaway, and sitting in the grass on the front straightaway. It was out of harm's way. There was really no problems as far as it was concerned, but NASCAR decided to wait until the round of green flag pit stops had ended to throw a caution flag. They did that on lap 231. Now, Chris Buescher in the 17 car and maybe the 47, and there might have been a couple of others who were had a little bit different strategy they were going to play, so they ran it a little bit longer, hoping NASCAR would throw a caution, they'd catch a couple of cars a lap down, and be in a decent, much better shape than what they were. NASCAR didn't do that. They waited till the end, then threw the caution flag. A lot of people on Twitter, a lot of people on social media, Spencer, were furious about it because it just seems like if there's a safety issue, it seems like they should throw it immediately. And if there's not a safety issue, then why are we throwing a caution flag at all? That's sort of the dilemma I think a lot of people are questioning. What's your take on it, Spencer? Do you think NASCAR got it right? Do you think there was something wrong with what they did? What's your take on it?
Car is way off on this. I don't understand the people, NASCAR officials in the tower or whatever, what runs through their mind to let that tire sit out there for what? I would say 10 laps at least. You guys would agree, 10 laps. Maybe a little less, 8 or 9, but that is a lot of time. Hell, it could have been more than 10 laps. It was a long time, put it that way. And I agree with you. If it was a safety issue, you throw it immediately. Clayton, you call 911. They ain't going to show up for 25 minutes. They're going to wait 25 minutes and then come. I mean, it doesn't make sense. You know, the tire was out of harm's way. It was right on the edge of pit road. According to Fox, that Kansas has the biggest infield grass out of every racetrack we go to. So pit road is the furthest away from the tri-oval at any track we go to. Yes, people are probably thinking Daytona and Talladega, but I go to Daytona every year, and it's actually not that wide of a green. So it doesn't make sense to me. You know, it ruined the race with the green flag pit stops. It, you know, because the 17 still had to pit. The 5 was going to regain the lead with about 25 laps to go. And it was going to be a show between him and Hamlin. And it just, you can't, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, I'm having a hard time coming up with words because if you're not going to throw it for the first 10 minutes the tire's sitting out there, why throw it at all? I mean, really, it's dumb to me. I think it would have been one hell of a race between the 5 and the 11. You know, the 11 might not have caught the 5, I don't know. Larson had a 2.5-second lead at the point over the 11. And, you know, I don't know about saying that because the 5 was in the lead and I'm a fan. I don't care if Quinn Huff was in the lead. I don't care. The fact of the matter is we had a good race forming with 25 laps to go. And, I mean, if you wanted to call the caution, call it in the beginning. NASCAR has done a lot of fishy stuff like this. And, well, I don't know if fishy is the right word, but just a lot of dumb stuff. And I think they're way off on it, way, way off. And I'm sure Phillip's going to have a good conversation about it. But, yeah, I mean, I'm it's a terrible call.
Yeah, it was curious. Listen, you know, Phillip has a classic line. I use it a lot as far as consistent in selective enforcement. And this didn't help the situation. Certainly didn't help that. I mean, this is something that – we've seen them do in the past, but it just, to me, there needs to be a set line in the sand. Either you're throwing a caution for a tire getting loose or you're not. I would have been okay. I've always said this. I feel like it's okay to wait until the race stops to keep the tire there. And I know there's a slight chance a car can go sliding through the grass, hit the tire goes into the – to me, it's so rare, it's so impossible to happen – that especially nowadays where these cars don't get sideways anymore, it's insane to me that we have to throw a caution for that. And then obviously when the race stops or slows down, certainly we can go out and get the tire. Philip, what's your take on it? I mean, again, we've been watching this sport a long, long time. We've seen a lot of crazy stuff with caution calls. We've seen a lot of crazy stuff with pit road. What's your take on it? Do you think NASCAR got it right? Do you think there's a better way to do this with the way they're doing it? What are your thoughts?
Well, we don't know what the heck they're doing because they change it up every single week. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I said it in the previous, segment there where if Chase Elliott was leading that race or if it was Kyle Busch or somebody like that, they'd have called that caution. The fact of the matter is it was a 5 car and he was destroying, and it's the 11 car who's the runaway points leader this year. He's got nearly 100-point lead right now. I mean, why are you affecting – the point is it's a caution when the tire got loose. So how is it not a caution for 15 laps or however long it is? I mean, I get that you mark it to the lowest common denominator, but really, I mean, it's just ridiculous. And I feel bad for the teams that actually made the call and were hanging out there waiting for that caution. Because in the end, it would have been a 20-lap caution because NASCAR doesn't even know how to score a race, and they would have had to wave around everybody. It would have been some sort of cluster. But the fact of the matter is, Chris Buescher, they're not a team that's running. They're right now, they're right on the edge right now. They're 15th in points. You know, you look at Richard, he's 19th in points. You got Tyler Reddick, he's 18th in points. These are the kind of guys, you know, they're trying to take a dice roll. Kurt Busch is outside of the playoffs right now. Those are dice roll kind of guys. And you're taking an aspect out of, you know, out of racing there, the strategy, we could get into the semantics of all these other things, you know. Let's see. NASCAR officials retrieved the air and tire, but we let the strategy unfold. Elton Sawyer was the one they sold out to go and because Scott Miller's usually the one they send out there to go and say to take it in the chin, but he usually says something stupid. So they sent Elton Sawyer out there, former driver, to go and take the hit for how dumb that was. It's like it is a – like how can you say it's not a safety issue? If you don't think it's safe for a pit crew member to retrieve the tire, which existed for decades, then it's a safety issue. I don't get it. It's whatever. I mean, there's a reason why this sport is becoming more and more like WWE, and it's something like going in a caution. There was a caution 15 laps before they threw the caution, and they decided not to, and they affected the race, and, you know, fundamentally – it's just irritating beyond belief. And they'll say, well, you don't have to watch, but it's like I'm going to watch and I have to deal with the fact that they insult our intelligence, you know, with such completely idiotic decisions on a weekly basis. I can only imagine what they're going to do at COTA in a couple of weeks with, like, track limits and some of the stuff they're going to have there. If they can't even go and get an uncontrolled tire, what are they going to do with track limits? That's going to be a complete disaster too, but we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, listen, that's the thing. It's just they got to race officiate. I'm not saying every decision is easy because there's certainly some decisions that are difficult, but it's the inconsistency that has – gotten this sport with these calls way off the rails, and that's why we can't understand anything that they do. 917-889-8280, that's the number to call. I want to discuss one more thing on this weekend's race before we move on to the Xfinity, or the Truck Series race from Kansas. you look at the points, guys, at the end of the these races, and you know, at the end of this race, I should say, and really the top 12 has got a pretty big cushion as far as points are concerned. You know, you got Christopher Bell, who's got 292 points. He's got a 24-point cushion over Michael McDowell. And then it's really McDowell, Bowman's right there, Buescher's right there, and then it's Matthew Benedetto, who's the final guy in 16th. Kurt Busch is shockingly 17th. He's a guy I kind of want to focus on. Tyler Reddick's 18th. Ricky Stenhouse Jr.'s dropped here recently. He's 19th, and Ryan Newman 20th. And then you got Bubba Wallace and Daniel Suarez. So, guys, to me, you know, there's some gap between Stenhouse and Newman, and some gap between Newman and Bubba Wallace there, but it's still up for grabs. You know, there's only, Newman's only about, if I could do quick math here, he's only about 31 points back of Matt DiBenedetto with 15 races to go. So it's pretty tight there from 16th, really from like 13th to 6th to 20th. Is there one guy who's currently outside of top 16 that you expect to – I'll start with Spencer on this. One guy outside the top 16 in points right now that you expect to make the playoffs, and there's one driver inside the top 16 that you expect to miss the playoffs 11 races so far in the season. Who do you got there for those?
Yeah, it's kind of tough. There's a few guys I want to say, but – just the way they've been running and the guys that are above them have been running. Like Dylan, I don't think his season's been too shabby. I think it's been okay. I don't think it's been awful. It ain't been great, but it hasn't been bad. And he's currently 16th in the playoff standings with Kurt and 17th. I would want to say Kurt could possibly jump in and Dylan will take the 15th spot from Buescher. As cool as that would be to see Buescher make the playoffs, I just don't think it's going to happen. So I would have to say Kurt Busch would move up into the 16th, and Dylan would stay, and Buescher would fall back. And I like Buescher. I think it would be awesome for him to make it in the 17 car. That's big for Roush, the way they've been running the past, decade. I think, and I just don't think Reddick has enough. And Stenhouse, I just don't think he has enough. And then Newman, I just don't think he has enough. So I think Buescher loses it and Kurt makes his way in.
Interesting. You know, and I totally would agree with you there as far as Buescher and that 17. I think I like Buescher a lot. I think he's a good driver, but he's the guy I think most vulnerable there to fall out. But you never know how the season's going to play out. But Kurt Busch is an interesting guy. You know, and he was – I kind of wanted to focus on him as far as a little bit was concerned just because of how he's been running recently. He was sixth in points. And I know it's three races in Homestead, but he was sixth in points after Homestead. And right now he sits 17th in the standings. He hasn't had a top 10 finish since Homestead. So it's been pretty surprising to see Kurt Busch just struggling as badly as he has. And that's to me is why I kind of pitched a question because it's not surely a lock in. How about you, Philip? I mean, Bubba's a guy, he's way back now in points. I mean, again, he's about, let me try and do the quick math again here, 43 points back, which isn't insurmountable, but he's going to have to really pull off some nice runs here, get some stage points here if he wants to start making the playoffs on points. You know, obviously he can win and get in if he wants to do it that way, but if he wants to get in on his points, he's really going to have to pull off some really start pulling off some good runs here real soon. Is there a guy outside the top 16 right now that you expect to be in the playoffs? And who that would that be? And is there a driver you expect to pull out who's currently in? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think Spencer was on it. You know, Kurt in what's likely going to be his final year. I mean, that team is not – that organization in general is off. You know, the Hendrick team is the lead Chevy team. You have RCR, and then with Dillon, like the RCR team and the Ganassi team are kind of in the same boat. You would think Kurt Busch. I was looking at it, you know, just as you were talking, just leading up to the question. I'm like, this, he's had a couple of, like, outside top 30 finishes because of crashes at Atlanta and then Talladega, which has not helped his cause at all. But when you look at the average finish across most of these guys from like Bowman on back to like going into, you know, even Ross Chastain, his teammate, they're all within a couple of positions of each other. Of course, now in Bowman's case, he's got the one win, but otherwise it's not great. It's not a great body of work. He's only got two more points than Chris Buescher right now this year. And he has two top fives, four top tens, and a win. So other than that win, it's he's had a bunch of he's had a few DNFs, you know, and that's something that once you get to the playoffs, that's a first-round exit waiting to happen. So, and he has less lead lap finishes than Michael McDowell, and it's Michael McDowell. You know, so, like, I think Kurt Busch turns it around. The only other person that I could really see, I mean, O'Richard has been in, he's O'Richard, you know, like he could probably go out there and pull one out because Brian Paddy's a kind of a dice roller. He could possibly get one. But then as you see with NASCAR, they probably wouldn't allow him to let that happen. But I think right now it's going to be very difficult considering how many guys have won so far this year. And the defending series champion hasn't won yet. The runaway points leader, 87-point lead right now, hasn't won yet. Kevin Harvick has not won yet. Those are three more guys that haven't that are gonna get one. So once you get past that, then you're talking about it's gonna be very difficult to make this playoff, and that would mean 14. Or 13 different winners at that point. So you'd only have three spots for points. So if you're really trying to make it in on points, it's going to be brutal this year.
Yeah, see, I'm going to go with a different guy. I think when I look at the points in Cup and I think as driver who's outside, who can get in, I agree. I think Busch is most vulnerable. Maybe Matthew Benedetto as well, but that's a Penske car. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But I think the guy who's most likely to get in and somebody that has quietly put together a really good string of races is Tyler Reddick. Tyler Reddick, we forget, you know, after Atlanta, the sixth race of the year, Tyler Reddick was 28th in points. And he finished 7th at the dirt race at Bristol, 8th at Martinsville, 20th at Richmond, 7th at Talladega, and 7th at Kansas, and got stage points in pretty much all of those races since Atlanta. He's jumped 10 spots in the standings since then, and he's right there. You know, he's, 18 points back of DiBenedetto right now, which is surmountable. It's not a crazy amount. We know the kid's got a ton of skill. He's very, very good on the mile and a half tracks. The only thing that would bother me about Reddick is I don't know how great of a road course racer he is. You got the Circuits of the Americas coming up here on May 23rd. You've got Road America, Watkins Glen, of course. We still go to Sonoma, too. That's sprinkled in there as well. So we got a lot of road course coming up, but he's good. He's going to be probably a factor at Darlington, at least a top factor around the top 10. Dover's a tough racetrack, but he's good there. Charlotte, you expect him to be strong there as well. I expect him to be strong at the National Super Speedway. Atlanta again in July. You know, so there's some races that he can rattle off some really good runs. The only thing I'd be real concerned about for him is the road courses and how he could perform there. You're going to have a lot of them here from now until the come chase time. You know, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 until the chase comes. So that's the only thing that would make me worry about Reddick and maybe give Kurt Busch a nod over him. But Reddick's really pulled off some really nice races here as of late. So keep an eye on that 8 car as the weeks go on. Okay, guys. It was the Wise Power 200 from the Kansas Speedway in Kansas City, Kansas. It was on Saturday, of course, and it was won by Kyle Busch. He won both stages, led 59 of the race's 140 laps, ran a really good race. His teammate, John Hunter-Nemechek, finished second in both stages and finished fifth, but I'll give you the rundown quick, and I'll get Spencer's take and then Phillip's take on the Truck Series race. Kyle Busch was your winner. Ross Chastain was runner-up. Third was Austin Hill, then it was Christian Eckes, and then John Hunter-Nemechek.
Todd Gilliland, Zane Smith, Rafael Lassard, Johnny Sauter, and Ben Rhodes rounded out the top 10. Quick note, Lassard finishing eighth. He is out of that ride due to lack of funding. It's Ryan Reed, I believe, driving that 24 car, this weekend at Darlington for that team, for GMS Racing. So a little disappointed to see Lassard, who seems like a pretty good little driver, but just didn't have the funding to run full-time this year after finishing eighth at Kansas. But Spencer, what was your take? I know you're a Chastain fan. You're pulling for him hard at the end. He did a hell of a job. I mean, the Nice Motorsports trucks have not been great all year. They've really struggled, but Ross going up there finishing second. Give Bailey Curry a shout-out. He did pretty good as well. He ended up finishing 12th, but he was up there in the mix towards the end. What was your thoughts on the truck race there at Kansas on Saturday?
Yeah, I had a pretty disappointing weekend, I would say, huh? But no, I just once again, Ross was in the right spot at the right time, and just a caution, messed him up and gave Kyle another shot at the race win. And what stinks is Kyle actually was put three wide and was going to continue to fall back, but when the caution came out, he was scored fourth. If it wouldn't have came out, he would have been toast. He would have lost, two or three more spots. And Ross was pulling away. And then when Friesen had that crash on the backstretch, it just gave everybody else another shot. So just another disappointing weekend for me with, my driver being so close and then coming up a bit short. But, no, that's Ross doesn't get too many shots at these things anymore now that he's with Ganassi over in the Cup. And but, I mean, it's, these trucks, like you mentioned right before you came to me, is they haven't been as good as they were in 2019. They were GMS fabricated. Those were GMS trucks. They were running up front, made the final four. Ross was winning races, leading a lot of laps, and they don't have that anymore. And you can definitely tell that the organization isn't as strong as what they were. But it's funny, Ross comes over and he continues to put the truck up front. He ran at Atlanta, was his first one this year, finished seventh, ran pretty much fifth or sixth all day, and comes here and didn't have the fastest car by no means. Could have won the race, and I would have told you he still didn't have the fastest car, but he came away second. And, when you finish up there, that's what brings home the money. So, and then you mentioned Bailey Curry. I think he did a hell of a job in the 45 truck. And that team needed that, really. I mean, they've been struggling so bad and just not having good runs. Ryan Truex is, I feel bad for him because I'd like to see him do good, but he ain't done a damn thing either. So it was an okay race. Hate to see Kyle Busch win, but I'm sure would like to see that 44 beautiful watermelon Plan B sales and Circle B diecast truck in victory lane.
They run Darlington this weekend, of course, at the throwback weekend. And actually, the 45 is shocking higher. Eric Darnell is going to be in that truck in the sort of a throwback scheme as well, with the back to his Northern Tool Equipment Ford back when he ran for Roush in 08 and 09. In 07, he ran back then. But he's running the trucks this year. He hasn't run a race in 9 years, and he's approved no problem. Jennifer Joe, 18 Super Speedway starts, nah. But Eric Darnell, nine. You've been running 9 years, okay. You're approved. Whatever. It's again, like I said last week, it's comical. But I don't want to get too far off track on that. Philip, what's your take on the truck race? Obviously, Kyle Busch standing in victory lane. A lot of people, look at that and go, oh, again. But what's your take on the truck race? Who stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, for Kyle Busch, I mean, mentioned it earlier with what him and Sam were going through this past week, and similar to what happened with Chase Briscoe and his wife last year around this time. So in that sense, it's getting a double, which is something that Kyle Busch seems to do all the time. It's not shocking, but under the circumstances, it's probably a nice thing. I mean, Ross literally is the only person that could drive a Nice Motorsports vehicle. I've came to that. I don't think I needed any help, any convincing of that, but Ross Chastain jumps in that thing and becomes a rocket ship. I mean, those things have been absolute garbage all year. And he starts basically tailback and he finishes second. I mean, got to give him credit there. I mean, yeah, for Spencer, the brutal weekend getting 2 seconds, but then considering how he's doing in the fantasy game, I mean, it kind of works that way. I mean, he has to get humbled somewhere. But, you know, Austin Hill getting a top five and John Hunter maintaining this time. Kyle didn't give him the win, so, you know, John Hunter getting stage points and maintaining his probably insurmountable points lead, you know, it's going to be pretty straightforward for him at this point. He's got a 33-point lead and over Rhodes going to Darlington, which is probably a track which will suit, at least in this vehicle, John Hunter very well. Huge lead after that. He has 78 points on Austin Hill, 83 points on defending series champion Sheldon Creed. So, I mean, it's basically a done deal. It's either going to be John Hunter or Ben Rhodes winning the regular season with a high likelihood of it being John Hunter. I mean, Rafael Lessard, you mentioned Clayton about him losing his ride for Eric Darnell. You know, that's kind of brutal, but when you consider GMS basically has no money in two with their defending champion and Zane Smith, you can't run three trucks with no money. So the odd man out was Lessard, and we'll see if he can catch on somewhere. But it'll be hard for him. It's going to be the point situation right now, and the crazy part is Lessard was only 19 points out of 10th, so makes it pretty brutal. There was a battle about five drivers there for that final playoff spot. You know, and I mean, Enfinger doesn't want to run every race either, so that disqualifies him there. So, I mean, I think in regards to that, I mean, you look at some of the other guys that were in there, but in the grand scheme of things, yeah, Sheldon Creed goes and gets a solid, you know, run through the first two stages and then doesn't get a finish. That's kind of a bummer for him. He's had kind of a rougher start to the year than he thought, but you know, we'll see. I think eventually this thing is going to turn around for the two truck and they're going to eventually get in a victory lane. They might be able to get in the victory lane this Friday at Darlington, frankly.
Yeah. And it's going to be a compelling race at Darlington. Okay, guys, not to move on so quickly, but we got a couple more things I want to get to tonight before the end of the show, and one of the things is the All-Star race at Texas. They announced the format this past week on the 28th of August. We didn't get a chance to really go through it, and I kind of want to get your guys' takes on it first. I'll go to Philip first and then Spencer. Let me just kind of say this and give you the format, and just – if you haven't heard it yet, again, if you've been buried under a rock, let me just read it. Hold on. The race will feature six rounds totaling 100 laps. Starting lineup for round one will be determined via random draw. Rounds one through four will be 15 laps. Round five will be 30 laps. The final round will feature a 10-lap shootout. At the beginning of round two, the field will be inverted via random draw, minimum of 8 or maximum of 12, all live on FS1. The round two random draw will be seen live by fans attending the race on Big Haas TV. Before a start around field three, the entire field will invert. But beginning around four, the field will be inverted via random draw, minimum of 8, maximum of 12. Starting positions for round five will consist of the cumulative finishes from rounds 1 and 4, the lowest cumulative finish on the pole, starting second lowest start second, and so on and so forth. All cars must enter pit road for a mandatory four-tire pit stop during round five. The starting positions for the final round will be determined by the finishing positions of round five. Only green flag laps will count in the All-Star race. The fastest team on pit road will do during the mandatory pit stop at $100,000, and the race-winning team will win $1 million. The only thing I really like – oh, and from the technical side, guys, sorry. All of the car will remain the same except for the tapered spacer, which will be which will slow it down even more. So if you like the 550 package, you don't like the 550 package – you know, they're giving you a little bit even more of that. So the only thing I like in that whole thing is $100,000 for the pit crew. I think that's kind of fun to bring the team aspect into it all. But goodness gracious, Philip, I mean,
I don't mean to put words in your mouth. I don't know how you truly feel about this, and I'm sure you're going to tell us in a little bit, but wasn't it so much nicer when you had the All-Star race and you could figure out what the hell was going on? You didn't have to have a engineer sitting next to you to calculate all these finishing positions and another person just to tell you what the hell's going on your pit box. I mean, goodness gracious, there's just whoever thinks that putting so many rules into a race is a good idea. I mean, just let the guys race. I mean, it's like, is that hard to do? I mean, just let them go out there. Leave the best drivers in the sport. Go out there and just say, you know what, guys, do it. I mean, I don't understand it. It can't be much. It's so complicated. I mean, my final thoughts on this is this. When I was in school, in college, I went for broadcast journalism. And one of the things they always said was KISS, which is keep it simple, stupid. Complicate things. Well, they've certainly complicated this All-Star race. Philip, I read people on Twitter and social media saying, get rid of this damn race and make it a 37th point race. Where do you stand on it?
Oh, God, you said plenty and you did an amazing job as always, but my goodness, it's one of the crappiest racetracks on planet Earth. And then you add the fact that you're going to have 86 stages, you're going to have inverts. I think there's a dizzy bat race somewhere in there. I think you're going to have a sparky dash in between the fourth and fifth stage. You're going to go and go and somebody's going to do shots, and then the other person's going to go and put their underwear on their head and go and run around. I mean, they should just do what Tony said at Talladega back in 2012. Tape them up solid, run them until they blow up. And if they're still alive, let one half of the field go one way and let the other half of the field go the other way. I mean, that's really what they're trying to do. I mean, it's a joke. It's Texas Motor Speedway, so that in its own right is a joke. But then on top of it, that you're doing all this, I mean, you're really, really, they market to the lowest common denominator, yet they come up with this. So then what the heck do you want us to do? You want us to have the calculator? You want us to, you know, McReynolds doesn't have a freaking clue. So what the heck is he going to do? You know, Clint Boyer's drunk, and then Jeff Gordon's up somebody's butt. So then what, Mike Joy is going to be expected to tell you all that stuff that's going on? Forget it. You have the stat guy. They might as well put the stat guy on the mic to go and explain all of this nonsense. It's a freaking all-star race. Run a 20-lap dash. Run it in the freaking quarter mile. Run the geriatric 250 like they did in 92, and where they go and run like little late models and run over each other. I'd rather have that. At the end of the day, a demo derby it's Texas, so it usually is a demo. Let them run a demo derby. I don't care. Anything would be better than whatever this nonsense is. I mean, they say SSS. That's what this is. That's because there's no respect to what this race actually was meaningful once. The only good thing, like you said, is bringing back the Unical 76 pit crew competition in a sense. And letting the fastest team, which will probably be Denny Hamlin, go and get $100,000, because $1 million doesn't matter to anybody anymore. So at least getting $100,000 to the pit crew definitely will, though.
Right, and that's part of it too. But no, I agree. And you know, I heard somebody on the radio. I listen to Sirius from time to time because you know I enjoy it, but. I heard somebody on SiriusXM say, and I'm not going to say who it was, they came on as a guest, and they said, I forget what the topic was, forgive me, but they said, you know, I'm okay with change, but as long as it doesn't kill tradition or something to that nature. You know, I'm okay with change, but we got to keep the tradition in NASCAR. Like, this All-Star race is like you said, Philip, it used to be like, people looked forward to this race. I mean, it was like, okay, the All-Star race, great. And a little bit of a, you know, look in my personal life, what I did
last year during this time, because we were all locked into a house, we couldn't really do anything, I went back and watched All-Star races and went back to the 80s, back when it started, went back and watched the Atlanta Invitational, went back and watched it all, and thought, what has changed this All-Star? What has made this All-Star race lose its luster for me? Because over the last 5 or 6 years, it's really lost its luster, even if it wasn't Charlotte. You know, and a lot of it's, you know, I can go all day on this, but a lot of it's got to do with, to me, the rules. They should open up the rule book and let these teams get a little bit creative. I think it would be awesome. But anyway, we used to have a tradition here, and part of it being a tradition is remembering things, remembering how it goes, and everybody saying, you know, having the same format. For example, Super Bowl has been 4 quarters, 15 minutes, forever. You know, we've never changed that. We've never changed the All-Star game in baseball to 7 innings because, well, pitchers, you know, they can't go as long. We didn't change any of that. And I know the All-Stars, you know, all sports All-Star games aren't as good as they used to be. I understand for one reason or another, baseball's different now. But we used to have such a good All-Star race, and they just, I mean, what in the hell are they doing? I don't know. I'm just like, to me, keep it as simple as possible. I've always liked what they did in 2002 when they did the eliminations at the end, where they took out drivers and made it the best 10 drivers on a 10-lap dash at the end of the race and said, go for it, guys. And you can invert the 10 and go for it. I think that was awesome. But we've just gotten so – it's somebody actually thought of this idea, and somebody – and people signed off on it. It's amazing to me, but it's incredible. It's incredible that can be done. But, okay, guys, you know, moving on, a couple more things I want to get to before the end of the show. Let's review our fantasy picks from Kansas, and I also want to get your favorite picks for Throwback Weekend for Darlington and get your picks, obviously, for Darlington as well. So we look back at our fantasy picks here from Kansas Speedway. Philip picked Martin Truex Jr. He had a really a decent weekend. You know, I talked about it earlier. It wasn't as good as what we expect usually from that 19 car. You know, Truex and that team usually run pretty darn good, and I think he ended up seventh. So that is worth 3 points for Philip Matthew. And then his dark horse at the race was Tyler Reddick, and I talked about Reddick. He had a heck of a race. Excuse me, Truex was sixth. So he was sixth, and Reddick was seventh. Okay, so 3 points for Martin Truex Jr. in sixth, and then your dark horse gets 6 points, gets double points because he had a top 10 run. That's 3 points, double it to six. So Tyler Reddick got you a grand total with Martin Truex Jr., a grand total of 9 points. That puts it up to 37. Clayton picked Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott finished in the top five. That's 4 points. And my dark horse finished in the top five as well. That was Matt DiBenedetto. That's 8 points for a total of 12 on the entire weekend. And then the Spencer picked Kyle Larson. He was in the, you know, how we missed Kyle Larson, Philip, I'll never understand. But we actually got lucky this weekend. Larson only got 1 point coming back to finish 19th. His dark horse was Kurt Busch. Kurt Busch got 2 points for finishing in 15th. Double that, that is four. So that's 5 points. So the standings heading into Darlington right now, 75 points for Spencer, 61 points for Clayton, and Philip Matthew at 37. So, Philip, we're going to let you pick again here to start it all off, and then I want you guys to pick your favorite throwback schemes, and maybe we'll do a little bonus or something if your throwback scheme wins, like Best in Show, if they do that, or something to that nature. So let's do your picks for Darlington for the race win, Philip, and for the dark horse for the cup race at Darlington.
Yeah, sorry about that there. I had myself on mute. In regards to a favorite, well, you just said it, and after the last couple of weeks, and considering what he has done recently at this racetrack, I'm not going to leave him out there for his guy. I'm going to take Young Money as my win pick. And in terms of a dark horse pick, I'm going to pick Kurt Busch because he's done pretty well there and he's outside of the top 16 in points. So I'm going to go with Young Money, Kyle Larson for NASCAR fans. For actual motorsports fans, he's Young Money. Spencer knows that. He knows a whole bit. And then his former teammate, Kurt Busch, who needs a good run. And it's a racetrack that suits veterans, and it's one of his better racetracks, even if he, I don't think he even has a win there, but it's a good racetrack for him.
Yeah, and you mentioned veterans, that I feel like veterans are always a good pick to go at Darlington because, you know, Darlington's always such a track that is so difficult for a lot of people to pull off, and so it's tough, and that's why I'm going to go with a veteran for my win too. I won here last year. I'm going to go with Denny Hamlin as my winner. He hasn't won yet this year, but he's come close a couple of times, so he's going to be my winner pick for this weekend. Denny Hamlin in the 11, of course, and then my pick as I got to pull up the points here for a second, guys. I'm sorry. My pick for my dark horse, I just want to make sure I'm doing this right when I look at the driver points after Kansas. Okay, so I'm going to go with the guy that I've been praising a lot, and I'm not really even sure how he's run it at this track, but I really like what that team's been doing recently, and I think he's a whole race car driver, and I can see him having a really good run, and that's Tyler Reddick. So that's my dark horse for this weekend. As for Darlington, how about you, Spencer? Who do you got as your race winner, and then your dark horse?
Thanks, Philip. I will go with, man, when you're third picking, it's hard. I will go with the, I'll take Kevin Harvick, I guess. Why not? And my dark horse will be Eric Jones.
Oh, man, I tell you, Eric Jones. That's a good pick. I like that because I think he's a good racer.
He hasn't been too shabby there lately.
No, and I'll tell you this. His paint scheme rocks this weekend. And that, we're going to get on that topic. I'm going to have to really think about this, guys. I know I kind of threw it at you guys before the show, so I'm sure you've been thinking about it through it all. And again, if there is a best in show, an official best in show where fans can vote on it, we will do a bonus, maybe 3 points or 4 points or something if your paint scheme finishes best in show or something to that nature. We'll figure something out. But your paint scheme, I'll start with Spencer for this, then we'll go to Philip. Spencer, what's your favorite paint scheme or two if you want? If you can't decide, who's your favorite paint scheme for this weekend at Darlington on a throwback weekend? I know I don't think all of them have been officially announced. I'm sure there might be some teams waiting for tomorrow. But right now, as far as it's concerned, who's your paint scheme?
I will have to go with the small four team of front row and the 34, throwing it back to Bill Elliott. And don't get me wrong, there are a lot of beautiful paint schemes, but they really hit that on the head. Every detail is perfect to what it looked like when Bill Elliott drove that 9 car, and they did a very, very good job with the gold wheels. And then just to give some exposure to the Xfinity series, I will take – it will either be the Gatorade car of Michael Annette. I think they did a badass job there, and I will give a shout out to Jeremy Clement and their UPS throwback scheme. That's a gorgeous car too.
Yeah, there's so many this weekend, and I know I kind of last week trashed it thinking that a lot of teams weren't going to announce it. For the most part, even Roush is kind of not really, but they technically did do a throwback scheme. So there was a lot of teams that didn't do that last year that are kind of participating this year. So good to see that. Hopefully more teams do it. It's a fun weekend for fans. It's cool to look back on all these paint schemes. Philip, Spencer gave us three, so you can give us three as well if you'd like. who's your couple of paint schemes that you really, really enjoy looking at this week?
Yeah, I mean, this is one that was announced today and kind of threw me off a little bit, but I was pleasantly surprised and really happy to see it. It was Chase Briscoe's throwback to A.J. Foyt, which is a connection to the fact that Tony Stewart's hero is A.J. Foyt, and I'm sure that it's one of Chase Briscoe's heroes too, to the 1986 Copenhagen Oldsmobile that A.J. Foyt drove in Cup, and also he ran a similar scheme in the Indy cars, and he has a helmet. All the details are there. Fits the sponsorship very well. I think it's a very well turned out car. Hopefully it'll run good. It'll be nice. He won there last year in the Xfinity Series. Probably should have won both races there. Give a shout to James Davison. They're not known for running very well. Him and his teammate were fighting a couple weeks ago, but that's a real cool. Harken back to an Australian motorsport legend and Dick Johnson, who's kind of like, you know, you think about the likes of Bobby Allison or Darrell Waltrip or those Cale Yarborough kind of guys. That's what Dick Johnson is in Australia. And he came here and ran Cup back in the late 80s and or like 89, 90. And that was a cool one. I mean, there's a lot of good ones this year. I'm pleasantly surprised too, like you said, Glenn, like a lot of, there are some that just made no sense, but really there's a lot of good ones, and it's nice. If people continue to try to be creative or go and connect to the legends, I think that's really what it boils down to. As long as they do that, then it's worthwhile. There's certain teams that mail it in. Gibbs is one of them generally with a couple of their drivers, but there's other teams that really try hard, and it's part of why they sell a lot of merch doing it too. So I don't think it's going, hopefully they keep on coming up with creative stuff to keep it going, because it's nice to see them and hear some of the stories that connect to those cars.
For sure. And you said Briscoe, Davison, is there one more that stands out to you, Philip?
I mean, yeah, that's the thing. If he really gave me time, like, there's so many, really. But, I mean, the one I just noticed that's just random but is kind of cool, there's a couple of these crew chief throwbacks here this weekend. And I guess, like, it's a cancellation because, you had – Greg Ives to his late model, which is interesting. I think the Eric Jones, and I also saw like a pseudo throwback to Trent Owens. I forgot Trent Owens drove. So that was something to see. I'm kind of torn. Obviously anything that involves John Andretti, we have a couple John Andretti tributes this weekend, and you can't go wrong with an STP, anything, if you're a NASCAR fan. So I'll go with that Jones boy. He is good at Darlington. Hopefully they give Baxter or gives him a good piece because it looks good. I'll tell you, it'd be nice to see that STP Chevy run up front this weekend and get a nice top 10 or top 15 finish to help Eric Jones's chances to go and make the playoff.
Yeah, for sure. And I just got to give a couple of quick ones, and then I want to get to Philip on something else, then Spencer too, and then we can end the show. But Josh Palicki is a really great one, going back to Lenny Pond. I'm going to go with that one. I like that one. I love William Byron's when he threw it back to, I believe it's Neil Bonnet's Valvoline scheme. That's awesome. And Brandon Brown did one for UPS, pretty similar to just Jeremy Clements's, but I like Brown's. That really stood out to me today. So, and not to totally go from one fun thing to another, but been a rough week in the motorsports world, and I just kind of want to get a few words
on a couple of guys. I'm going to go to Philip for one and Spencer for the other, and some memories of what you guys have. And Philip, I'm going to go to you for Bobby Unser, because I can't speak for Spencer, but I can speak for myself. You know, open wheel and everything that goes on in that world is a little foreign to me, but obviously we all know the Unser family, whether it's Al Sr., Bobby, Al Jr., the whole Unser family. And Bobby lost his life this past weekend at the age of 87. Just a few words on Bobby Unser and what you remember from him and memories of Bobby Unser.
I mean, for me, Uncle Bobby, is he was well, and he's still known and now and being up there with a lot of his friends. And the fact of the matter is, I always remember him as an announcer and how he and Sam Posey would fight on the ABC broadcast, and Paul Page had to sit there and be the traffic cop. I mean, that was how I remembered him. He'd always go and he'd have his takes, and he would go and say whatever he thought, but he'd say it in such a pleasant tone and people would just let it go, even though it was really horrible in some cases. And he said some really terrible things, but in the grand scheme of things, he was a great race car driver. He won on dirt. He won on pavement. He won 3 Indianapolis 500s. He won Pikes Peak, I don't know how many times. He's an absolute legend of motorsports, and he set the tone for his brother Al Sr. and, of course, you know, his nephew Al Jr. and then his sons and, you know, all the that whole family. And if there's one thing, like, if you really want to have laugh and see Bobby Unser, and I guess in a light of what, you know, kind of what he became with all the stories he could tell. Dinner with Racers did a show, not just the podcast or podcast, but they did a show on Prime, Amazon Prime, and they made Bobby Unser into a cartoon. It was one of the funniest shows I've ever seen, you know. And so it's a big loss for motorsports and for the world, honestly, because of how funny he is and how original and genuine Uncle Bobby was.
Yeah, that was tough news. And the other tough news this past weekend was Eric McClure, who, if you're not really familiar with him, he ran about 225 starts in the Xfinity Series from about 2008 to about 2016, 2017, right around there. Never really came close to a win, was sort of with teams that weren't really all that competitive, but 42 years old. And, you know, I know there's been some speculation on social media about what exactly happened. It's really none of our business, but our thoughts and prayers are with his family as well as the youngsters. What about you, Spencer? You got any memories of Eric McClure driving? You know, he drove the Hefty car for a while. I know that was kind of a tie-in. He had a tie-in there with the Hefty sponsorship, and not nearly as heralded or as decorated as maybe Bobby Unser was, but certainly somebody who the sport's going to miss greatly.
Yeah, I mean, he was around, you know, in my time, and I remember that horrific crash he had at Talladega where he spun and his car shot off like a rocket. But the biggest thing is one of my good buddies, he owns a memorabilia shop over, you know, where we live, Clayton, in Daytona, and he was really good friends with him, played golf with him, and just he was friends with him. He's got a personalized suit hanging in his shop that's personalized to says best and all that. And so, I mean, he was close. And actually, when Eric McClure had a K&N car and Austin Cindric drove it, he sponsored the car with his memorabilia shop on it on the back quarter panel on both sides. So that was really cool. And so he was very close with Eric. And you know, and it was shocking news to everybody, really. So, everybody knows him as a Hefty driver, you know, Hefty, garbage bags and Ziplocs and whatnot and Saran wrap and whatever it is. So, it's very, sad when you lose somebody in the industry, and especially if, you know, it's harder on the ones that are close to those people. So,
And then I guess to bring it up, Derek Lancaster was also released from the hospital too, so that's good. So, yeah, it's very tough when or it's sad to see when somebody loses their life. It's actually at a young age, 42 is not that old. So our thoughts and prayers are with the Eric McCoy family. He leaves back 7 daughters and a wife. So thoughts and prayers to both of them.
Yeah, that's it's terrible. I mean, it there's no other way to explain it. You know, just sad. And again, our thoughts and prayers are with the Unsters and the McClures. I know if you're curious and you are a casual fan listening to the show and you're curious as far as the tie with Eric McClure and Morgan McClure Motorsports, his uncle was Larry McClure, so who owned that four car that had 3 Daytona 500 victories. That was his brother, his dad's brother. So if you're curious on that, it was his nephew, Larry McClure's nephew, Eric. So our thoughts and prayers are with the family there. Also, you've mentioned, you know, Derek Shell, getting out of the hospital. Great to see that as well. So I just want to thank everybody for listening tonight. Went a little long, but we had some fun with the paint schemes. And we'll see you guys next time on Talking Circles. We've got a triple-header weekend. You're at Darlington Raceway. Stay safe, everybody. Please have a safe week, and we'll see you next week on Talking Circles. Good night, everybody.